A lot of things go through my mind as I'm sitting before I walk up here, and I've got my lesson in my thoughts, and sometimes my thoughts go in other places, and I'm worried about people that were in the prayer and stuff like that. But if Chris could lead that song just before I step up here every Sunday, so I could hear those kids singing, it changes my whole perspective walking up here. This is great. I just love it. We're in Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews chapter 7, what a fantastic singing we have here, and a great family to come and worship and sing praises to God. Hebrews chapter 7, I think this is my new favorite chapter in the book of Hebrews. All our lives we hear about Melchizedek. Melchizedek, Melchizedek, Melchizedek. There's things that are written in the Bible that we look at and we think, well, yeah, I really don't get it. And somebody will explain it to me. Oh, wow, that makes a whole lot of sense. 2 years later, I don't get it. I still don't get it. Melchizedek. Who is Melchizedek? This King Melchizedek. Mentioned several times. Mentioned in Genesis. Mentioned again in Psalm. In the Psalm 110, I believe it is, verse 4. Was mentioned in Genesis. We're going to talk about that tonight in this chapter. This chapter brings it all together. We're going to understand who Melchizedek was and why Melchizedek is who he is, or why he is in existence, period. Okay, so this really makes things very, very clear. Remember what we're trying to do here. Hebrews is trying to show them of a better covenant, a better priest, a better priesthood, everything better. Hebrews, a better than book. To the Hebrews. The Hebrew people were trying to go back to the old ways. We can look at denominationalism today, premillennialism today, and all of the facets of it, and people wanting to go back to that. Why? Why would anybody want to go to something that's so much worse than something we have today, when we have something so much better? In fact, if you think about this, there's a lot of people that we call, I don't want to say preppers, but people that go back to the old ways. Let's go back to the old ways. Let's go back to farming. Let's go back to this. Let's go back to it's much healthier for you and things like that. Yeah, let's go back to churning our own butter. I've never heard anybody say, I want to go back to churning my own butter. That's just a lot of work for you. Yeah, we can get it other ways. You know, the butter, you can get good butter made with machine. But there are some times we got to draw the line about going backwards because it is not productive. This is where Paul's talking about. We're being counterproductive by trying to go back. Now, first three, let me give you a little overview first of the chapter. Verses 1 through 10 is the greatness of Melchizedek. Verses 11 through 19 is the significance of Melchizedek's priesthood. And verse 20 through 28 is the greatness of Christ's priesthood. Now, if you keep that in mind, or kind of keep that at the forefront of the teaching, this is a powerful, powerful chapter. It's amazing. Verses 1 through 3. Okay, let's back up. First of all, Melchizedek has already been mentioned three times previous to this. Melchizedek was mentioned in chapter 5, verses 6 and verse 10, and Melchizedek was mentioned in chapter 6 and verse 20. Chapter 6 and verse 20 ends, this is how it ends, and so we continue. It says, whither the forerunner is for us, entered even Jesus, made a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. That's the way chapter 6 ends. And so we enter into chapter 7 with this. For this Melchizedek, he's continuing his thought. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. Keep that in mind. Melchizedek met Abraham and blessed him. This I may not get through with this chapter. This is amazing. So if you'll remember back in Genesis chapter 14, around 18 or somewhere around there, Abraham had gone out to battle because he wanted to bring Lot back. He went out to battle, and as he came back, the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah met him, and the king of Salem, this Melchizedek, met him, blessed him, and Abraham paid tithes unto Melchizedek. Okay, so, okay, yeah, we saw that. People read that in Genesis, and they don't think anything of it. They just move right through it. However, it was there for posterity, if you will, all the time that it's been there. When they get up to this point, it is brought out to why that is. I imagine a lot of people wondered about Melchizedek throughout time until Paul wrote Hebrews here. So, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being by interpretation, king of righteousness, and after that also king of Salem, which is king of peace. Now, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth not a priest continually, or abideth a priest continually. This doesn't mean that he never had a father or mother, that he just appeared on the scene, that he was an angelic being or anything. And some people want to purport that, but that's not what happened. It just says that there is no record of his genealogy whatsoever. There's no way they can trace him. The reason there was no record of his genealogy is because when we're comparing the Levitical priesthood here, the priesthood of Christ, so much better than the Levitical priesthood, he's showing you this. Here's the Hebrews, here's the priesthood, here's Moses and Aaron. Aaron is the high priest and his sons, all the way down the Levitical priest, 81 of them in total, all the way down. Christ now being a high priest, and they're wanting to say Christ is here. And he's saying, no, Christ is actually up here, because he wants to go all the way back to Abraham, and he shows that just above Abraham was Melchizedek. Everybody knows how great Abraham was. They figured him, he was the father of the whole nation. He was the key person in all of their genealogy. And here Paul is saying, consider how great Melchizedek was, in that even Abraham paid tithes unto him, and the greater blesses the lesser. Now, so that being said, he points out something about Melchizedek, that there was without father, without mother, no beginning, no end, that it was a priesthood that wasn't after the order of Levi. They only knew priests that were after the order of Levi. Aaron was the first high priest, and then his son, and then his son, and then his son, and then his son. The only way you can become high priest is if your dad died. Your dad died, you became the high priest. When you die, your son becomes high priest, or becomes a priest. And the priest or the high priest, they were all part of that system. And that's the only way it would work. But here we have a priesthood that's separate and apart from that. Has nothing to do with that. He's going to show them, he's going to make a correlation where Melchizedek was a type of Christ, Christ being the antitype. Melchizedek was this type of Christ. And so he's going to be able to point that them to that. God in his providence inspired the writers to write what they wrote, put all this in place, even in, through inspiration, put Melchizedek in place, if you will, so that when they got to this point and the Hebrews started falling away, wanted to go back to Judaism, God could inspire the writers to say, point to Melchizedek and show them that, because that's why he was there. He was there so that they could look and they could see. Who would ever thought of a priesthood outside of Aaron? Well, we have Melchizedek. There it is. Go back through our writings and we can see it. And so Paul pulls that up and he's able to use that. Melchizedek was only mentioned in Genesis 14, verse 18, Psalms 110, verse 4, Hebrews, as I mentioned, chapter 5 and chapter 6 and chapter 7, three times in chapter 7. So we move through. Now consider how great this man was, talking about Melchizedek. This chapter says more about Melchizedek than any other place in the Bible. Consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. Now, if you'll remember what happened during this battle, Abraham goes out, and we think Abraham's an old man at this time. He's very old, but he was still strong, because if you think about when he died, he was still strong when he died. So Abraham goes out and he fights this battle and he comes back. He gives a tenth part of the best of the best. That is the 10% of the best. Never anywhere in scriptures do you read about a tithing anywhere before, prior to this. This was Abraham did this on his own. He gave 10%. You know what he did with the rest of the spoils? He let his troops divide them. He didn't keep anything for himself. He literally took the best of the best, gave to Melchizedek, and gave the troops the rest of it. That's powerful right there when you consider what's going on and what he's trying to convince them of as how Christ is better than Abraham, better than Moses, better than the Levitical system. How? Because he is more like Melchizedek, a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. And so they got to go, okay, is he better than Aaron? Yeah, is he better than Moses? Is he better than, he's better than Abraham. Even Abraham? Yes, all the way back. Let's go all the way back. So in order to show the better than priesthood of Christ, Paul doesn't just show him better than Moses, but goes back all the way to Abraham above that. And verse 5, and verily they that are of the sons of Levi, who receive the office of the priesthood, have a commandment to take tithes of the people according to the law, that is, of their brethren, though they come out of the loins of Abraham. So they were commanded to take tithes from the people. The people pay tithes to the priest, and but the Levitical priesthood was only given by it was without a covenant. Aaron was going to be the high priest, and his son was be priest, and his son, as I mentioned before, and we'll see how that plays in here in just a little bit. But they received the office of the priesthood. In other words, it's coming. It's coming. You're born a male into as a Levite. You're the descendants of Levi. You're going to be in the priesthood one way or the other. That's it. That's where you're at. Verse 6. But he whose descent is not counted from them, okay, not counted from the Levitical system, Melchizedek, received tithes of Abraham and blessed him that had the promise. Abraham had the promise. Now that's part of that covenant. We're going to see there's several times where God made covenants. And when he made a covenant with those people, that covenant was never broken. It was never broken. God never broke a covenant that he made. He never came back and broke the covenant. And so the priesthood was not, it was without a covenant. It was just a priesthood. It was the Levitical law. It was put into place. It was law, but it was not with a covenant. We'll see that God didn't swear it into oath. I said a covenant. It was without an oath, not without a covenant. And so he sees this, he points this out. They come out of the loins of Abraham. But he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham and blessed him that had the promises. And without all contradiction, the less is blessed of the better. Melchizedek is above Abraham. The less is blessed by the better. In other words, Melchizedek blessed Abraham, gave him the blessing. How many times you read in the Old Testament, one of the patriarchs passes on blessings to his children? Jacob and Esau got the blessings, and the father blessed them. The 12 patriarchs, when their father passed away, when he set them all around, gathered them around his bed, he literally passed on his blessings. There might have been a curse, some of them. He passed on the blessings to them. The greater, passing the blessings to the lesser, literally lift up his legs, laid him down in bed, laid back and died. But it was always the greater blessing the lesser. He's pointing out and making a point how Abraham was blessed for Melchizedek. Melchizedek is better, and Jesus is a priest, as according to Scripture, is a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Psalm 110, verse 4. Now, and here, verse 8, men that die receive tithes, but there he receiveth them of whom it is witnessed that he liveth. God gave us what we need to know from right here. This verse is a little bit difficult to comprehend, but he's talking about from the men that are dead. In other words, they have their descendants over and over and over. Melchizedek, there he says here he's talking about the priesthood at the time. Here, men that die receive the tithes; they're going to die. They're giving tithes. We just said where the Levites were required to gather tithes, and then they're going to die. They're going to die, and somebody else is going to take over, and the tithes go to these people, but they're going to die. There he receiveth them of whom it is witnessed that he liveth. There's no record of his death, no record of anything. Why is there no record of his death? Because he is the type of Christ. And so we're going to see how that plays out. And Paul, amazing in his writings to be able to put this together. I've read this hundreds of times and never really picked up the way that Paul meant it. The Hebrews got it because he's trying, they know exactly where he's going with this. Verse 9. And as I may so say, Levi also, who receiveth tithes, paid tithes in Abraham. Okay, for he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. What he's saying basically is Levi, who was one of the sons of Jacob, the Levitical priesthood, right? So Levi paid tithes indirectly because Abraham paid tithes. Therefore, all of his offspring paid tithes through that. In other words, through Abraham paying tithes, even though he was still in his father's loins, he was still part of that, or considered that he paid tithes as well. So in other words, he's still trying to show them the greater than, how Christ is greater than Levi, because Levi is part of Abraham. Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek. If therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? If the priesthood could take away sins, if the priesthood was perfect, if it was meant to be forever, why would there have to raise another one after the order of Melchizedek? The priesthood was never meant to be eternal. It was always meant to be temporary. It was a temporal priesthood. It was never meant to go on forever. And so he points that out. It was always, you can go back through scripture and we can see, it was never meant to be forever. It was their design as a schoolmaster to bring them to the knowledge of Christ, to bring the people. And now they're missing, they're wanting to go back. Let's go back and reset this up and let's go back. You think about premillennialists today that want to say that Christ is going to come again and he's going to reign for 1,000 years on the throne of David and set up all of that system all over again. Seriously, have you never read the book of Hebrews? Can you see that Paul's begging these people, look, stop doing this. Don't do this to yourself. Look what you're doing to yourself. You're going back to something that is never going to be any good. It's done away with. It's abrogated. It was nailed to the cross when Christ died. How can you want to go back to that and pull that back down? Let's go back to the old way that's inferior to the new way. Something that's inferior. Why? No way, no way. You imagine somebody that's been cured of some disease and they get done. They say, man, I'm so glad to be done with that. But can we go back through that again? Can y'all give me that cancer again? No, but no, that was ridiculous. And it's almost as ridiculous as what they're doing here. They wanted to go back to this system, which was, of course, inferior. Now, verse 12, it says, for the priesthood being changed, there's made of necessity a change of the law. Some people today, they want to hang on to the Old Testament law. They want to hang on to the Ten Commandments. They want to hang on to this, hang on to that. They want to say that, well, the moral law was the ceremonial law was done away with, but the moral law was not done away with. The old law was done away with. It was nailed to the cross completely. Literally right there, it says, if there's a change of priesthood, which we know there was because the Levitical priesthood was done away with, it was actually done away with at Pentecost when Christ died on the cross. Authorized priesthood was done away with at Pentecost. The Israelites continued to carry on the priesthood until AD 70, after which it was all destroyed. But at least as far as scripturally, the scriptural priesthood was done away at Pentecost when the church was established. For now we have a new priest, with Christ. For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. There's never anywhere that says that someone from another tribe other than the tribe of Levi could ever be a priest, ever. It's just never there. It's never mentioned, never written at all. For of whom these things are spoken pertaineth to another tribe of which no man gave attendance at the altar. There was never authorization for any other tribe, anybody in any other tribe to be a priest. In fact, anytime someone offered sacrifices, it was not of the Levitical priesthood or was not of the Levitical descent. They were chastised or even punished by God for that. For it is evident that our Lord sprang out of Judah, of which tribe Moses spake nothing concerning the priesthood. It is far evident. So, verse 15, it is yet far more evident for that after the similitude of Melchizedek, there ariseth another priest. There ariseth another priest who is made not after the law of carnal commandments, that is worldly commandments or fleshly commandments, but after the power of an endless life. Christ died on the cross, spent 3 days in the grave, and rose up never to die again. Conquered death. This is, again, after the order of Melchizedek. How much better could it be? The Messiah is Hebrew for anointed. The word Christ is Greek for anointed. So we look at this. For he testifies, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Verse 17. Verse 18. Let me back up. I'm going to make sure I don't miss something here. Verse 18. For there is verily a disannulling of the commandment going before for the weakness and unprofitableness thereof. For the law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in of a better hope did, by the which we draw near unto God. The law made nothing perfect. You think about the Israelite people. When they were in Egyptian bondage, they were over there for 400 years, 430 years. They were over there and they were under bondage. They weren't under bondage for 400 years. They were under bondage the last part of it. It was like this. They were complacent. You think about this. When the nation is doing great, everybody's doing great, there's bread on every table, there's money in every account, what do? They start walking away from God. You look at the book of Judges where we see the people start going after idols and then the judge brings them back and they go back after idols and the judge brings them back. Okay, so the people that sat in Egyptian bondage, they had to be afflicted in order for them to leave. They were given a promised land, but they'll never go there as long as they got it good in Egypt. So the Pharaoh that came, there arose a Pharaoh that knew not Joseph. In other words, he had forgotten all the great things that Joseph did, so he started afflicting the people, and he started saying, hey, they're more than us. They're going to take over Egypt, and we're going to be their slaves. So he afflicted them, so much so that they wanted to leave. And Moses came in, brought them out, took them in. Now, they're barbaric people to some extent because they don't have any rule or guidance. God gives them the Mosaic law to guide them. And they're under this law, and they're following this law to learn how to sacrifice to God. They are learning how a holy, how a sinful man can approach a holy God, literally through sacrifice. Now, so for the law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in of a better hope did, by the which we draw near unto God. The law didn't make anything perfect, it just foreshadowed the coming of Christ. They have a priesthood. They learn how to follow priests. And you look at the book of Judges we've been studying on Sunday morning. The judges were kind of a introduction into kings where they could have kings. They wanted to have kings. Well, God never wanted them to have a king. He was their king, basically, but they wanted a king. Give the people a king. So Samuel gives them Saul. We know how that turned out. And they worked and ended up with David and various other kings. But the point is the judges prepared them for the rule of a king. Why? Ultimately, because Christ would rule as king, the King of kings and Lord of lords. And so that would take them to that point. Now, verse 20. And inasmuch as not without an oath he was made priest. Now, inasmuch as not without an oath he was made priest. That means that inasmuch as he was made a priest with an oath. Now, there was only oaths made a few times, and I mentioned this earlier at the first part of the chapter. There was an oath made to Abraham in Genesis chapter 22, verse 16 through 18, when Abraham offered his son Isaac, and he said, because you have done that and not spared your son, I swear with an oath. He swore with an oath that he would, from that point, that he would make Abraham's seed as of the stars of the sky. That was an oath, and he kept that oath. Now, that oath ties into this in a sense because all of those descendants of Abraham are not necessarily blood descendants through the line of Abraham, but are also through Christ in the kingdom. So we are descendants of Abraham through the grafting in or the adoption of sons. So that verse has kind of a twofold message. The second oath was to the Israelites, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 34 and 35. And this was an oath that because of their sinfulness and their rebellion, they would not enter into the land of Canaan. There was another oath that was made to Moses, and that was in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 21. And that is that Moses will not enter into the promised land. Even though he begged for it, he would not enter in. Because God couldn't, when it came time for him to die and go into the promised land, he could not go because God swore with an oath that he would not enter in, and God will not break his oath. He swore with an oath. Now, David also in Psalm 89, verse 3 and 4, that his seed would be on the throne forever. That his seed would be on the throne forever. So David thinking that there would always be a king, and this is what a lot of people want to take that passage and they want to use it to say that Jesus is going to come back and he's going to reign on a literal throne of David here on earth, but that's not the case. He is still from the seed of Judah, which is from David, which comes down through Davidic priesthood, the Levitical line. And then an oath to Christ, Hebrews 7:21, priesthood forever after the order of Melchizedek, Psalm 110 and verse 4. So those are the oaths that were made. There was an oath made to Abraham, never broken. Oath made to the Israelites, never broken. Oath made to Moses, never broken. Oath made to David, never broken. Oath made to Christ that he would be a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, it can't be broken. They can change it. The premillennialists can say, oh no, Christ is going to come back and he's going to sit on the throne. You can say whatever you want, but God made an oath. It cannot be broken. You can't start another priesthood. You can't go back to the other priesthood because we have a better priesthood that was made with an oath. It cannot be broken. God will not break, cannot break his oath. So therefore, it has to happen. This priesthood of Christ cannot be changed. There's no matter what they say, no matter what false teachers do, it cannot be changed. And it says it right there, inasmuch as not without an oath, he was made priest. Verse 21, For those priests were made without an oath, the Levitical priesthood, but this with an oath, by him that said unto him, the Lord swear and will not repent, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. There it is laid out really, really clear, right? Now, verse 22, by so much was Jesus made a surety of a better testament. Jesus is a surety. That is a down payment of a better testament. Very, very clear. And they truly were many priests because they were not suffered to continue by reason of death. In other words, there was a lot of priests in Levitical priesthood. Actually, there was 81 of them from Aaron all the way to the last one in AD 70. And I can't remember his name. I keep wanting to say Phinehas, but it was similar to that, but that wasn't it. Okay, so there was 81 priests in all. Why were there so many of them? Because as soon as one would die, another one have to take his place. It couldn't go on forever because they continually were dying. And so Paul is making this so clear to those people, and it might not be as clear to us because we're so far removed from their Levitical system. But being enveloped in the Levitical system, they could see exactly what he's saying here. This man, because he continueth ever, hath an unchangeable priesthood. 81 priests, one changing from another to another, from Aaron all the way to AD 70. So Mosaic covenant was national, that is between God and the nation. It was never between us as Gentiles. It was between God and the Israelites, the Mosaic system. It was national. And the new covenant is universal. That is, it is open to all. It is universal. It's for all on the planet, all who will obey. Wherefore he is able, verse 25, wherefore he is able also to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. That is, that Christ is alive and well and will never die. He will never die. He was a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. And he lives forever to make intercession for those of his, those that come to God. Now, finally, we'll close out. I did better than I thought. I didn't think I would ever get close to being finished. For such a high priest became us who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and made higher than the heavens. The priest offers, you think about the priest offered innocent animals. He had to offer these innocent animals. Now, the priesthood the high priest didn't necessarily always offer the animals, but those under his, the priests were under him. So you had the high priest and then the priest, and they would offer, they would all do their jobs, and there were specific days and times and things like that, and specific offerings that they had to offer. But they had to continually come in and bring their offering. They had to continually bring their offering. If what he's saying here is, if you go back to that, you're going to have to get back into continually bringing the offering. I don't understand how these people practice Judaism today, these Messianic Jews, if you will, because they don't have a lineage of the Levitical priesthood. There's no way, because it was all destroyed. All the records were destroyed in AD 70. Oh, well, we can trace our lineage. You can say that all you want, but here Hebrews chapter 7 tells you that it was done. It was never meant to be permanent, and here it's over with. It's done. In fact, if you're doing that, you got to get back to offering animal sacrifices. Oh, well, that's the ceremonial part. There's no divisions in Scripture between ceremonial and moral part of the law. There's people today, aside from those Jews, there's people today in denominations that still want to practice that. They want to say, well, we have to follow the Ten Commandments. We have to worship on the Sabbath. We have to do this. We have to pay tithes. We have to do this. And they want to follow all these things. You don't want to see them cutting the throat of no bull and getting a high priest to come in and build a tabernacle, go behind the curtain. The veil was torn in two when Christ died on the cross. If you'll remember, when Christ gave up the ghost, the veil of the temple was rent. I'm thinking about a curtain like this, and it was torn from the top to the bottom. It was ripped down. And this wasn't a curtain that you could reach up. It was 10 or 12 feet tall, I think it was, to the top of it. It was torn. It was rent. It was opened up. The altar was open to all through a once-for-all high priest sacrifice, where they would offer sacrifices of animals for the sins of themselves and the sins of the people. Christ, not having any sins, offered himself up once for all, having no sin in himself. He became the sacrifice. Never anywhere did the priest offer himself, because they were sinful. They offered animals in place of them. In fact, if they would offer their son, they offered an animal in place of their son. And so, verse 27, who needeth not daily as those high priests to offer up sacrifice, first for his own sins and then for the people's. For this he did once when he offered up himself. And he offered himself up as a sinless sacrifice. However, He came back to life. He came back. For the law maketh men high priests which have infirmity, that is, sinful men from the law, our high priest. But the word of the oath, which was since the law, maketh the Son, who is consecrated forevermore. Once and for all, sinless offering, once and once for all. So he literally goes in and explains to them how much better the law of Christ is going to have to come in with a new law. When you replace the old law, you take out the priest, you got a new priest, you have a new law. You have to have a new law. People look at the New Testament, they say, well, y'all don't believe in the Old Testament, Church of Christ, y'all don't believe in the Old Testament. Yeah, we believe in the Old Testament. We're just not bound by it. We're not under it. A lot of the things that are in the Ten Commandments, a lot of the things that are in the laws of Moses, and people say, what did Moses have, Ten Commandments? Oh, they had 200 and something. There was lots of those commandments. A lot of them are carried over in principle into the New Testament passage. We're not supposed to murder people. Thou shalt not kill. That's one of them. We're not supposed to commit adultery. Thou shalt not commit adultery. That's one of two. So there's a lot of the commandments. I think all of nine of those are brought over into the New Testament, not under the Ten Commandments, but they're brought under in part of the law of Christ, right? The New Testament law. So we're under the New Testament. Paul is pointing out to them and showing them, why do you want to go back to those ways? We have a new and better way. Remember when they questioned Paul and they said, this man is bringing in teachings contrary to Moses. Yeah, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll speak to you and I'll tell you what the prophets will back me up on. He basically says, I'm going to give it to you the way it's written in Scripture. I'm going to show you what it says. Our forefathers, they had it down, and this is what they said. And here we are, we go through the Levitical priesthood, and now when this comes to pass, y'all want to turn around and go back. If you look at Acts chapter 2, when Peter preached the first gospel sermon, they started speaking in tongues, and they were accused of being drunk. And Peter said to them, he said, these are not drunken as you suppose, but this is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel. He points back to the prophet Joel. Joel says that it's going to happen. He says, these are not drunken as you suppose. Imagine his audience when he's teaching them. Hey, calm down. These guys, they're all talking in different languages. They're talking in different languages. So everybody that's, however many languages are there, they're talking in these different languages, and they're saying, oh, these guys are drunk. What's wrong? They've been drinking, and they're full of new wine, is what they said. They're basically drunk. He said, men are not drunken as you suppose, but this is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel, and it shall come to pass in the last days, saith God, I will pour out of my spirit upon all flesh. Your sons and daughters shall prophesy. Your young men shall see vision. Your old men shall dream dreams. And on my servants and on my handmaidens I will pour out in those days of my spirit, and they shall prophesy. And I will show wonders in heaven above and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. He's saying, the things that Joel talked about, that's what's happening right here. This is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel. He brings it in. Paul does the same thing. He goes back and he points back all the way back to Melchizedek, and he says, here it is right here. We have a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Why would you want to go back to that old way and go back to those old laws? Hebrews chapter 7, fantastic chapter. If you get a chance, read over it again and consider the things that it tells us. And let's move on. And also, if you get a chance, read chapter 8 before we come back together. Again, I will not be here next week, as I switched my fifth Sunday back 1 week because the fifth Sunday weekend, that Friday, is our summer series. And so, Darla and I wouldn't be able to go out of town. So we moved it back 1 week, and right now, I don't know where we will be at that point, but I will not be here next Sunday, so we will continue this when I get back. If, as always, if there's any need, the invitation is yours. If you have any need, come together while we stand and sing the song that's been selected.